Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Welcome to Cavs Podcast. I'm Nate Smith. I'm here with Eli Kim, and Chris Francis is going to be joining us in the next segment. But first off, it's coaching hire day, right, Eli?
Yes, it is.
The Cavs hire Kenny Atkinson, who was last a head coach for the Brooklyn Nets in 2020, when he was fired after 62 games.
I think technically he resigned.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But they asked him to resign, I think was the...
I think he was quoted by saying, no one in there is listening, so I'm out.
Yeah, and not a great career record with Brooklyn, 383, but they did have that 2017-2018 season where, I'm sorry, the 2018-2019 season where they went 42-40 with basically a team that was cobbled together out of scraps because the Nets had traded away all their draft picks to Boston for Kevin Garnett and Chris Paul, which in retrospect was a bad idea to trade all your young guys for a couple of Oakleys. And that Brooklyn 2019 team featured a couple familiar faces, didn't it, Eli?
Yes, it did. You know, we got Mr. LeVert and Mr. Allen, who it's interesting that everyone's bringing up that they have good connection and rapport with Atkinson, because I personally don't think either of them will likely be on the team next year.
Really? Why do you think that?
I just think Allen is like the most likely to leave, and even in today's presser from Woj, they surprisingly said center Evan Mobley. Maybe it's a mistake, but just maybe reading through the tea leaves, it just felt like that you know, Jared Allen might not be here for long. And I think even Brian Windhorst specifically said, like, hey, it's not like they hired this guy because of Jared Allen's input. So it'll be interesting to see.
Interesting. I think we're in for a wild ride of an offseason. I don't think there's anything set. To me, there's going to be a lot of guys reading the leaves and trying to put themselves in the best position they can, the, you know, Paul Georges and LeBron Jameses of the world. And the rest of the dominoes are kind of fall into place after that. So it's going to be very odd. I also think the fact that it's I would say a weak draft class. Would you agree?
Oh yeah. I think it's definitely not a great draft class. Even from the top all the way down, it just feels like there's a lot of tiers that there's drop off, and it's already from a mountain that's not very high.
Yeah, for sure. A lot of it reminds me of the 2013 draft, the draft where the Cavs made one of the worst draft picks in NBA history, drafting Anthony Bennett overall, number one, who was, I believe, also on that team. No, he wasn't.
I think he did coach Anthony Bennett for a hot second.
For a hot second, but not that year. Exactly.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it was definitely an odd year. I think teams that nail drafts like these are teams that really set themselves up well. I think there are definitely some diamonds in the rough in this draft, and we might talk about a couple of them. But first off, what's your gut reaction to the Cavs signing Atkinson?
I mean, I think the process was flawed. I think hearing the reports of Dan Gilbert meddling in, kind of where it felt like it was going James Borrego, and then last second you hear these reports of Dan Gilbert trusting Tom Izzo's opinion of him, respecting him, That just makes it feel like the process isn't very clean. It's never a green flag when your owner meddles in the decision. I mean, you can just look at Detroit. That was an owner decision. You just look at, you know, even within Dan Gilbert's decisions, the last two guys he picked, John Beilein and David Blatt. And I thought David Blatt was a great coach, just not for the right fit of a LeBron team. If it were, you know, the Kyrie team without LeBron, maybe that would have been a better fit for sure. But, you know, in both those cases, people look back and say Dan Gilbert went rogue and made those choices. So let's hope. I don't think this was a completely rogue decision. He stayed within the guidelines that the team was trying to stay in. But it's just interesting that maybe until last week, it felt like James Borrego was poised to be the coach. And then kind of right before the weekend, you heard rumblings that it would be Atkinson. So whether hook or crook, I think we got to a point that's acceptable. But I'm not a fan of hearing kind of that meddling at the last second here.
I will 100% tell you why James Borrego was not hired by the Cavs. And it has 100% to do with the fact that they didn't want to hire a guy with the same initials as the previous guy. I just felt like there's just too much bad karma. I literally think it is as stupid as that.
I don't know.
That being said, I think Atkinson's fine. I am not one of these. Here's the thing, Eli. A coach can't win you an NBA championship, but a bad coach can certainly lose one. And I have no problem with Atkinson. He certainly has the pedigree. He spent the last three seasons in Golden State. One of those was, oh yeah, a championship. Was it not?
Yeah.
So, you know, he's been through a lot of crazy stuff in Golden State. I mean, he was there when Draymond Green punched Jordan Poole. He was there when they had their assistant die. Their assistant coach passed away, I think it was last year or the year before. Yep. I can't remember.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the coach that passed
away. Yeah, and he coached, he was an assistant on the Clippers under Tyronn Lue in 2021. So this is not somebody who's just kind of a flash in the pan guy. He's respected in NBA circles. He has got all the experience. He's not, you know, pulling giant Beilein out of Michigan. It's nothing crazy, and I think that's fine. I also think the other reason, I think Dan Gilbert wanted a hedge against the kind of growing power of Kobe Altman within the organization. And I think he wanted a little bit of a counter voice, and to not have everybody be just totally in line with Kobe Altman. So I want to hit you up on your second prediction from earlier in the preseason. Is Johnny Bryant going to be on this staff? Because I know you had a big prediction about that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm 0 for 1 already, so it's going to be hard to say. I think he will end up because, and the big reason I think so is that the Knicks hired Mo Cheeks to take an assistant job, and I think that was a preemptive move knowing that Johnny Bryant probably would not be there. Interestingly enough, I think Atkinson's right-hand guy in Brooklyn, Chris Fleming, I think is his name, he just took the job with Portland and to coach with Chauncey Billups. So there was some speculation from the team's mouthpiece, Chris Fedor, about how Johnny Bryant might be in the mix, which was kind of the first time he has reported it. So my sense is that if you're going to get Donovan Mitchell sign off, I'm assuming that you're getting some feedback that, hey, like, this is my guy. You know, I want him as assistant. I would like to think that there's still that. So hopefully I can get bat 50%, which is pretty good here.
Yeah, I think there's real strong odds that him or Alex Jensen would end up on the staff. So it's interesting. In terms of the NBA coaching carousel, is J.J. Redick, was he hired for the Lakers?
Yes.
Okay. And I'm trying to think if there's no team without a coach right now. Is that correct?
No, the Pistons.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Because they fired
Monty Williams.
I think I texted you guys Sunday that Monty Williams has entered the chat, or Saturday night. And
yeah.
That, what a wild ride for Monty Williams. I mean, NBA Finals. Or no. Did he make an NBA? Yeah, he made an NBA Finals. And then out the next year. And then one season with Detroit, who just, what is Detroit doing? Like, I don't understand what they're doing. They make no sense.
I don't know what the Pistons are doing. I think the funny stat that everyone's been throwing around is that the Pistons won less games than the Celtics in the playoffs. they only won 14 games in the playoffs. I don't know what the Pistons are doing. I do like Langdon. I think he has a good connection with James Borrego, and I think Borrego would be a great coach there.
I do too, actually, and I think it may be one of those things where we kind of kick ourselves down the road on Borrego. But like I said, I don't think Atkinson's that bad at all. He just has to have some creativity to the offense. But one thing I like about him is he does kind of trust his vets, but not in a way that he enables them, if that makes sense. He enables them to be better versions of themselves, not worse versions of themselves. So it'll be interesting to see how the season plays out. And certainly I would think that Donovan Mitchell would have to have signed off on this.
The reporting has been that he's signed off and that he did talk to Atkinson and Borrego in the process. Interestingly enough, too, Kenny Atkinson's technically, I think he's in France a lot because he's coaching the French national team. And Mr. Donovan Mitchell was in France last week. So there was a lot of rumbling that maybe they got together in person last week as well. So
Interesting. And that probably plays in a little bit to some of the rumor. I've seen some rumors that the Cavs may take someone from France. But the mock drafts are just all over the place.
Yeah, it's incredible to see just kind of the range. Like, the guy from France, I think, I don't know how to say it, it's Pacome Dadier. He's like this really young, not even 19 years old yet, small forward who looks like he just pulls up from anywhere, basically. But he's like a really nice young kid, nice young prospect, and some people have him like in the mid second round, and some people are really high on him, have him like in the 20s, where, you know, maybe Atkinson has that inside coaching in this summer. So it'll be interesting to see.
It'll be interesting to see. And I want to get a take from Chris Francis in a few minutes here on some of the other draft prospects. So let's see if we can get Chris added, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Cavs Podcast. Nate Smith, Eli Kim. We are joined by the Chris Francis, kicking it in New England. Would you go to celebrate the Celtics championship there, Chris?
You guys there?
Yeah,
no.
We are.
Sorry.
Ladies and gentlemen, player. Chris Francis, better late than never to Cavs Podcast.
It was more just kind of coincidence, but you know, we were supposed to go to it was my buddy, Spencer, a big Spurs fan, he invited me to come up to stay with him and his family up in Canton, Massachusetts, just outside of Boston. And we were scheduled to go to the parade on Friday. They put the parade off until Friday because of the weather. We partied too hard on Thursday and never made it. So,
yeah.
But I did go to a comedy show in Boston. So that's where that picture came from the group chat.
Oh, okay. What picture was that? Describe it for the crowd there.
It was beautiful, like downtown Boston, you know, super beautiful. It was a great night, you know, like there was like fog. Overcast over the skyline in Boston, and they put up a huge banner in one of their, I'm sure, storied buildings in downtown Boston. And it's a massive Celtics banner hanging in the rotunda of one of the structures. And, you know, go Celtics. Go our Celtics. It did it. They did it.
Barf. I don't know. Okay, so we'll get back to that in a minute, but give me your knee-jerk reaction to the Kenny Atkinson hiring news, Chris.
I'm indifferent to it. I prefer Atkinson over Borrego, at least. I think that's definitely how I feel between the two of those, which I guess it was really between those two candidates. As far as I know, Eli probably could shed some more light on more specifics.
Why is that, Chris?
Why am I lukewarm on it?
Why did you prefer Atkinson?
Why did I prefer Atkinson? Borrego's defense, you know, concerned me, you know, in this short tenure over in Charlotte. I get he's a pop guy, but I know personnel matters a lot, but I just think Atkinson, I believe that, you know, with his Golden State background, the Nets made the playoffs as opposed to Borrego. I don't think the Charlotte made the playoffs when Borrego was at the helm. But so Atkinson made the playoffs with D'Lo, you know, Jared Allen and Caris LeVert. That's a feat unto itself. There was an article recently I saw posted about Atkinson's work with Brooke Lopez. Which is interesting. Like, there's an angle, I guess, that Atkinson can really help out Evan Mobley. So, for those reasons, I'd take Atkinson over Borrego. As far as my indifference is, it's just that I wanted a new name. You know, I didn't want to retread. You know, that was my only requirement.
You didn't want the same initials.
Yeah. Right. Right. Exactly. Exactly.
The curse of JB can't continue.
That's right.
Yeah,
it seems like everybody's happy about it, as far as I can tell. So, you know, more power to him. Hopefully, he's a success, wildly successful.
I'm with you. I'm trying to think. Oh, and so yeah, let me get a knee jerk reaction from both of you. We've kind of covered the coaching hire and. Celtics championship. Was this the worst NBA finals you've ever seen since the Cavs in 2007? Or was this really just, are the Celtics that good? What's your knee jerk, Chris?
Celtics are that good. They're incredible. I think they learned from their past experience. They have extensive past playoff experience. Kudos to Brad Stevens for bringing in Kristaps Porzingis and Drew Holiday. Drew Holiday was amazing in that series. I mean, I can't think of a guy who made it.
And Kristaps was awesome the entire playoffs.
Awesome. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he won two of those. You know, he played the first two and he won them both, you know, for him. So it was just a combination of factors. It's that continuity they had, as far as the personnel was concerned. They had a core group that they stuck with for over half a decade now, of constant playoff appearances. And I think, I think it boiled down to Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum saw Luka as food, on the defensive end. You know, they just relentlessly attacked him. No mercy, forced him to reckon with what the finals are like in terms of the pressure, in terms of the intensity, in terms of the competitiveness, physicality, all that. So, you know, I think it was just surgical dismantling of a kind of a weak Dallas squad and a weak West. You know, screw the West. East forever, baby.
Eli, what about you? Disagree?
I think Boston is a deserving champ. They were the best team in the regular season by far.
And they were the best team in the playoffs. So.
And they were the best team in the playoffs. And as much grief as they got, they literally lost three games in the whole time. So, that's a dominant run. And don't forget the Cavs were one of the teams to beat them and their building. So,
well, and I just have to tip my hat to the way they built that team. I think this championship was a lot less about Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, who I think were both very good at times. Jaylen Brown especially redeemed himself after last year's kind of playoff, not being able to dribble left-handed. But to me, the way they built that with, you know, I keep thinking back to what Ben Worth said in our five-on-five and in some emails, is the way they built that defensive backcourt with Jrue Holiday and Derek White. And then the other thing is Kristaps Porzingis just absolute. I don't know if I ever saw him miss a shot the entire playoffs when he got a smaller guy switched on him. He just punished every smaller guy that was switched on him. And that's what he did and what Jared Allen did not do or Evan Mobley did not do. And
but it helps when you're a 6'4" point guard of Jrue Holiday can post up Evan Mobley.
Oh, absolutely. Well, Jrue Holiday is probably one of the most underrated players of the last 10, 12 years. I mean, just his ability to influence winning and to be able to do all the glue things that you need and then also give you scoring. Maybe not every game, but certainly when you need it, you're not losing anything out there for the most part. And he was the best version of himself this playoffs. And then Derek White, just doing everything defensively, shooting. What a steal he was. Like, and I think I got into it with you a little bit when the same year that the Celtics traded for Derek White, the Cavs at the end of the following summer traded for Caris LeVert. And, you know, I desperately wanted Derek White the year before, and the Cavs didn't get him. And I really think that was a miss on their part. Kobe Altman, didn't win that one.
Yeah. He didn't win a lot of things, apparently.
I don't know. Coach, he wants to hire. So both you guys, what lessons can the Cavs take away from this finals in terms of, you know, Dallas getting there and Boston win it at all? What can they model their team after that we saw in these finals? I'll go to you first, Eli.
I think it's pretty obvious. You got to have some wings. I mean, the whole Boston has two really good ones. On most nights, they have the two best wings on the floor.
Brown and Tatum?
Yeah, and then it doesn't hurt that the two guards you play can both hit threes, play defense, and kind of do everything else. I mean,
guard four positions.
Yeah, even when they're small. And then...
And to be fair, Holiday and White are not that small. And they're very strong.
I think, Holiday's pretty big. I think Derek White's a little shorter. But to be fair, they also always play a five, or not always, but for the most part, if everyone's healthy, they're playing a five that can shoot threes and Porzingis or Horford. And they're just literally a team built with analytics.
Team built for 2024. Like, exactly. They're not a team built for 2009.
No. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's the lesson to learn. I mean, can the Cavs get there in one offseason? Probably not, but could you try? Like, I mean, could we work towards that goal? That's what the Cavs need to learn and try to build on. Obviously, I think there's a good, framework. At least one big that's you can play all the time. You got at least one smaller guard you can play all the time. But what about the middle? I mean, everyone thinks the Cavs are a big team because they play those two big guys, but positionally they're pretty small, like across the board, right? Like, I mean, Allen
at the forward, tall, but they're at the wing spots, the guard and the small forward.
You kind of need. I think the lesson is, hey, like even those guys, the luxury is they're the two best players and they always have at least one of them on there. And that's what made them so dominant this whole season.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I have a couple things to add. You know, one of the things that I saw throughout the playoffs was players that play in the corner and their ability to hit the offensive rebounds was just huge for Boston. And having that size that you just talked about and the ability to crash the boards was enormous, you know, get those extra possessions. And I think you saw from both teams, neither team ever played Dallas nor Boston. They always had a center on the floor, but they rarely had two just pure bigs on the floor. And I'm not sure the Mobley-Allen duo lineup is sustainable unless Mobley becomes that player that can play out on the wing. And I think that Allen needs to play out on the wing more, too. I think Allen needs to expand his game out. But I also think the other thing you saw from that is that center is not dead in the NBA. I mean, Lively and who did they get from Washington?
Gafford.
Gafford were awesome all playoffs as a two-man pairing. And as were Horford, and I hated to say it. I hate how good Horford was in the finals. But as was Horford and Porzingis. And then I would also say you've got to have a team that can really dope your way to the finals. I'm joking, of course. They're filled with dopes. They weren't on dope. Anyway, I have my suspicions about Boston, but I'll just leave them with that. And as Eli and Chris slowly back away from the podcast, as I lob grenades there. What about you, Chris? What can the Cavs take away from this?
It's shooting. Boston can shoot. That was the difference in the series. You know, we talking about Drew Holiday, talking about Kristaps Porzingis. The reason why those moves worked out, it's not Drew's defense. They had Marcus Smart, Defensive Player of the Year, there. It wasn't the defense that Drew Holiday was bringing. It was actually the offense. It was his unselfishness, his ability to shoot the ball, his ability to work off the ball. And you know, I saw a lot of instances where basically Drew was a role man slash dunker man slash, you know, just playing at very interesting spots on the floor, but making incredible passes or finishing at a high level, efficient level, or hitting down clutch three pointers, you know, same with Derek White. You know, I think the lesson to take away, and Boston plays a true five out, you know, they play, like you guys said, Horford can shoot, Kristaps can shoot. They really didn't see the court together because you want to put as much skill and you want to put as much on ball skill on the court as you can possibly muster, especially in the playoffs when the defenses get so much more difficult to play and the physicality goes up. So I think it's, you know, it's shooting. We need to find some shooting. You know, this is the conundrum that the Cavs have had now. For
shooting that can actually stay on the floor.
Right.
You know, sure, shooting sure. That doesn't need a year to load up the ball to shoot.
Yeah. So, I mean, we're running out clowns like, you know, Okoro and Niang who can't hit the broadside of a barn. You know, it's like we just can't even be competitive. You know, contending.
I don't know if that's necessarily true. I'm excited to see what this team looks like with a new coach. I certainly wouldn't miss Okoro if he went away, but I also would understand if the Cavs tried to, make that qualifying offer and see what he can do this season. So I don't know. But I think you're selling Drew Holiday a little bit short because, you know, having that guy that can play both ways where Marcus Smart, you know.
That's what I'm saying. The difference between Marcus Smart and Drew Holiday is Drew Holiday is a better offensive player.
Absolutely. I think he's a better defensive player, too. I don't think he's a flop artist the way Marcus Smart is. But
yeah, I mean, I think they're comparable. I mean, I'm not going to, you know. Defensive Player of the Year has to mean something. So, I mean, I don't think it was a fluke that Marcus Smart is a bad defensive player or lesser than. I mean,
I'm not saying that. I'm just saying I agree with you that Drew Holiday, you didn't lose anything getting Drew Holiday and losing Marcus Smart defensively.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, and you gain tremendously on the offensive end, which is my point, you know, is that Drew Holiday was knocking down shots and is willing to play off the ball, something Marcus Smart was unwilling to do, and that's why I think he got shipped off. I think the reason why Smart got shipped off was he had to be on ball. He wanted to be on ball on offense, which is dumb because Tatum and Brown are obviously better at offense. And he wasn't as good of a knockdown shooter in clutch moments as Drew Holiday is, you know? So I think that was, and also I'd say there's a leadership aspect too. You know, I would say that Smart was kind of the heart and soul of the squad while he was on there, you know, for the Celtics. There's tons of Celtics fans who, you know, bemoaned his trade that happened, you know, for Drew Holiday over the last offseason. Well, they're eating crow happily, you know, this offseason because, you know, in order to, and I think what happened was what the people who filled the leadership vacuum was Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. They finally had to, they were forced to step up because of Smart's absence on that squad. So they were now the longest tenured Celtics. And I think it paid off.
I'm with you. I think there's another Cleveland connection to that team in that the Haslams basically handed Boston a championship through their idiotic Damian Lillard trade, which ended up with, you know, Drew Holiday in Boston. Kristaps Porzingis, the Celtics stole him, basically. The trade they got Kristaps Porzingis for was just absolutely ridiculous. So I think it just kind of goes to show you, you can get guys off the scrap heap and they can be good for you. You got to do your due diligence and you got to keep them healthy. And I think that's the other big takeaway that the Cavs can take from this is, you know, the Celtics were able to keep Al Horford and Kristaps Porzingis relatively healthy. And Drew Holiday has had some injury issues in the past. So I think that was a huge win for them, and how you manage the roster and how you manage injuries is enormous. And I hope the Cavs improve their approach this offseason. And I hope the Haslams sell the Browns. So there you go. And with that, we'll be right back. Welcome back to Cavs Podcast. I'm Nate Smith. I'm here with my old friends, Chris Francis, Elijah Kim. Third segment here. We're talking a little NBA draft, which is what, in 3 days?
It's Wednesday night, actually.
Wednesday night. Are they doing the two-day extravaganza here?
Yeah, it's 2 days. Round two is actually at 4 o'clock on Thursday, which is pretty random.
That's so silly.
So it means no one's going to watch it instead of the people who might stay up just to see it.
Yeah, that's like drama. Always the best part of the draft is when you get some rando, you know, guard from Romania coming out of the crowd who just happens to be there. It's like, and then who's the deputy commissioner has to shake his hand.
Mark something.
Yeah, I can't remember his name. But I always enjoy how kind of goofy and, you know, tired the second round of the NBA draft gets. And I would not be surprised with the way the draft is going to maybe see him add a third round again at some point in the future. But it should be an interesting draft for sure. Eli, what do you think the Cavs, like, who do you like for the Cavs? Will it match your expectations?
I don't think it'll match my expectations because the Cavs will probably think they are smarter than everyone like they always do. And they'll pick someone that probably doesn't really make sense. I'm with you, Nate. I'm a big, let's avoid the big, the old wings strategy. There's a lot of old wings. I mean, even at the top of the board, you guys got like Dalton Connect, who I think will be good for like 3 years in the NBA, but his upside is pretty limited. You got guys like Tristan Da Silva, who a lot of people think is a good fit for the Cavs.
I don't think he'll be there at 20.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I think he's getting pushed up a lot. And then kind of the really older guys are like Baylor Shireman from Creighton, who I think is pretty lights out. Jalen Tyson's a little older. Kevin McCullough, those are kind of the older wings that if I were the Cavs, I would probably try to avoid and kind of use this opportunity as like a quasi lottery ticket. But with, you know, the framework is something you need. So for me,
kind of in the Amoni Bates mold.
Yeah, but like a better, better option. I mean, for lack of a better
first term. Round version of that.
Yeah. So for me, I'll just name off no particular order, guys that I think realistically could be there at 20 that I like. Of the wing guys, I kind of like, he's not always listed as a wing, but Tyler Smith is the guy I'm most intrigued by.
I'm with
Big
you.
Body, played at the G League Ignite, lefty, shoots it well. Kind of has like a weird old school game when he posts up. He looks like, it looks like film from like the early 2000s or 90s, but I'm intrigued because I think he's athletic enough to move his feet, and he's so big that he could kind of guard slower wings, I think.
And he's a good shot blocker.
Yeah. I like him. I like this guy from France, who ironically has been blowing up lately. And also with Kenny Atkinson coaching the French national team, maybe he has further insight. I think it's Pacomi Dadier. He's like 19 years old, big leaper, shoots it pretty well. Just looks like a springy guy, but he's not super athletic and kind of has a shorter wingspan. But I think his game, I mean, he's like that lottery ticket. And then if there's another guy that I would say I like, I know older guys typically don't do great, but I actually do kind of like Jalen Tyson. From Cal, I think he kind of fits what you need in the NBA, and he'd be more of a like a true glue guy. Guys that I'm kind of out of, even though they are younger, are Kyshawn George and Johnny Furphy. I just feel like they just don't have like anything to hang their hat on. They're not great shooters. They're not super athletic. But I'm like completely out on Furphy. I don't get it at all. I don't get the hype at all with him.
I don't like guys with stupid names.
But that's kind of my
excellent reason. I love it.
That's my like kind of quick just, you know, shot from the hip watching YouTube. And there's honestly like no one I'd want to trade up for. I mean, that's the part that like is the like even if someone fell who's going in the top 10, like I'm not like in love with any of these guys. I could see like maybe them being a better fit. Like Dalton Connect would be a great fit for the Cavs, but like if he, there's no way he falls to 20, first of all, and I just don't think like he's going to be a great long term NBA player. He's younger than Max Strus by like 3.5 years, and that's like who you're taking, you know. And I'm out on like Filipowski and any center who really can't move. I'm pretty much out on. So like Edie, I'm out on.
The Cavs don't need another big that can't move and can't shoot.
Yeah. The one guy that is not a wing that kind of does intrigue me is this the guy from Pitt, Bub Carrington. I feel like he's like really young and springy and maybe he could grow, but he kind of reminds me of like what Kevin Porter Jr. is supposed to be without the off-the-court issues. But that's one like non-wing that I'm a little bit intrigued by, and he could be there at
20. Who's the guy with the assault trial in the assault trial? I can't remember. Well, we'll get back to that. Who do you think the Cavs will take?
I think they're going to take an old wing. I mean, if De Silva was there, I think they would take him. But I actually think they're going to end up with Johnny Furphy or Kyshawn George. That's who I think they'll end up with.
Interesting. Terrence Shannon Jr. was who I was thinking of.
He's projected to go in the late first, early second, and he's with Clutch Sports.
So. Yeah, but I've seen him anywhere from the teens into the second round. So
yeah, interesting. I'm actually curious to what Chris thinks.
Yeah, for sure. But before that, is there? Oh, you said who the Cavs get? Okay, yeah, no, Chris, go.
Yeah, I mean, piggybacking off of Eli, I mean, looking at the board, there's a lot of I feel like the board right now, the consensus board rather, the consensus board on rookiescale.com, I think over the past, I've been checking into it now in the off season every day or every couple days. And I think the board's really falling in the Cavs' favor. Like it's actually falling beautifully. Like really, the only two guys that have really moved up and became the highest risers that came out of reach for the Cavs are Da Silva and Bub Carrington at Pitt. I think they're high risers. I think they get taken earlier. I really would only want Carrington out of the two of them. But all of a sudden, we've got obviously Kyshawn George, Furphy, are two of the wings or whatever in that Cavs range. The guy, but there's a ton of names I like. You mentioned Terrence Shannon Jr. I read about his case, I think it's safe to say he was railroaded. And Lawrence, Kansas, is an underratedly racist town, so I think he just was targeted because he was black at a crowded bar.
No, I'm finding that interesting. Just as I literally was in Kansas last weekend, and more than a couple of my relatives went to school in that town. So,
yeah, no, I mean, yeah, I think there was a local news report that was on YouTube about the case, and pretty much it looked like a straight up extortion case from two ladies who were trying to take him for a ride. You guys go check out the thing, go check out the sources for yourself. But that's my conclusion. I'd have no bones about trying to take him as long as they did, as long as they talked to him. Terrence Shannon Jr. is intriguing. Baylor Shireman, intriguing. I'd take him. Tyler Smith, intriguing. Jalen Tyson, whom Eli mentioned, intriguing. The guy I like the most, however, is a guy who's fallen way out of it. He was supposed to be a lottery pick, has now fallen to 21 on the consensus board, is Isaiah Collier. He's not a wing, but he's a 19-year-old guard. He was the lead guard for USC this past season.
Yeah. Really, I think the big knock on him was the turnovers, but USC was kind of a mess this year.
Yes, exactly. And I think, what's intriguing about him is his ability to create his own shot, his ability to pass the ball. I think taking a guy like Isaiah Collier, he's a home run shot, in the vein where you guys were just saying, I think correctly so, it's like an Imani Bates type situation, of trying to take a guy who's well regarded, but just has fallen in the draft. And I think taking Collier kind of opens it up. It opens up a possible opportunity to trade Garland, I think, because that's still kind of hanging in the balance or can't kind of hanging over head of the Cavs offseason here, along with Donovan's extension. So Collier, I think, is probably my favorite right now. Any of the guys, Smith, Shannon Jr., Tyson, Tyson, whatever, all those I'd be happy with. I agree with Nate, though, that the Cavs will probably pick Furphy or Kyshawn George, which will be disappointing because I agree with the problem with those two guys is just they're simply not skilled enough on offense. They're not good enough shooters. They're not good enough passers. They do seem to have both defensive chops. I think between the two, you probably take Furphy. I think Furphy's probably the better guy, unfortunately, with the unfortunate name to take between the two of those guys. But those are probably the only two guys that would kind of upset me besides something off the, something off the rocker or whatever.
Why don't you like Kayshawn George?
High turnover rate, low usage. Not enough passing juice, not enough shooting. It's just he reminds me of Isaac Okoro.
Frame, huh?
Yeah.
It's just the 6'7 with the 6'11 wingspan.
Yes, exactly. And there's a, that makes sense. It makes sense to just, keep taking athletic wings until you hit something.
We lose you, Chris.
You there? Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, you said you I get, and okay. Then you dropped out.
I get the meta strategy of just keep on taking shots at athletic wings, young athletic wings, and hope one of them, pops. But to me, like, Cavs are a contending team. I'm actually okay with taking one of the older wings that have proven at the college level, at least, that they can pass a little bit, that they can shoot a little bit. You know, the Terrence Shannon Juniors, the Jalen Tysons, even Furphy. You know, I'd give him credit for that over the Keyshawn George or the, you know, Ryan Dunn, you know, is another name. Excellent defensive player, but absolutely no offense to his game at all. Averaged, I believe, 8 or 9 points a game in high school. So, you know, like, that's where I'm, you know, I just got done with my rant about shooting. Take a shooter. Please take a shooter. You know, that's all I ask for. Please take a shoot. Kobe, if you're listening, please take, oh, wait, is Kobe? Oh, yeah, Kobe's still the GM, right?
For now.
Take the shooter, for the love of God, take the shooter.
Yeah.
I'd even take, I mean, I wouldn't even be mad about Filipowski for that reason, to be honest with you. You know, even though I think he's slow, I think he's going to be limited defensively. At least there's a theory that he could get his shot out to the 3-point line. So, but yeah, so yeah, I'm the end rant. So what do you got for me, Nate?
Well, I'm going to give you mine in right after the break, but we'll hit the pause button real quick here and be right back. Welcome back to Cavs the Podcast. I'm Nate Smith. I'm here with Chris Francis. Eli Kim has left the building. The boss put the kibosh on his podcasting. He's got to go do boyfriend work. So we've all been there. We know. So I've got some crazy names for you. I do hope the Cavs don't try and get too cute. But there's some definite upside guys that I think are going to be there when the Cavs pick. I also think, I don't think the Cavs could trade down because there's too many teams with too many draft picks for the Cavs to trade down. But I do think they could trade up a little bit. And I also think there's a chance some guys fall to him. And excuse me, one of the guys I'm very intrigued to see if he could fall to them is Nikola Topic from Serbia, who has a partially torn ACL, didn't have a very good year in Europe, hasn't been able to work out for teams. But he gets a lot of Goran Dragic comps, who played in the NBA for 15 years. I think if the Cavs could, you know, snag a guy who may not be able to play this year but could play in the future, that has lottery talent, I certainly think that makes a lot of sense. You know, I love Jalen Smith. One of the guys that really intrigues me, and I read a lot about this in the last week, and I'm going to have to, quote the article, but, Bronny James is one of the guys that intrigues me. And one of the reasons that he intrigues me is second generation NBA players are on average outplaying their draft spot by 30%. So NBA second year players are.
I love it. Are you creating a new analytics?
It's not new. There was a.
We need a name for this. We need a name for the Bronny Index.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's certainly an interesting phenomenon. And I was reading about this. Of course, it was on Hoops Hype today.
I mean, he's not going to play LeBron James, right? Like,
no, he's not going to.
You're not saying that.
No, but I'm saying. But look at. If the Cavs could get him in the second round, or, you know, very much like a Amone Bates situation or a Larry Nance Jr. situation. I mean, look at the Nance brothers. Larry Nance Jr., not very well, you know, regarded college player, definitely outsized impact in the pros. You look at a guy like Gary Trent Jr., who wasn't even drafted, you know, clearly a maybe not a great player, but certainly a player that has shown he belongs in the league. There are a lot of guys with that are outplaying their draft spot. And I think we don't know. Yeah, this was the article I was thinking of. It was by Tom Haverstraw. And it's just amazing how many guys fell because they thought, oh, this guy's getting hyped up because he's this guy's a kid. I mean, you look at DeMontis Sabonis, Stephen Curry, even Kobe Bryant, Klay Thompson. It's just, you know, it's almost like these guys become underrated, and then it's becoming a market inefficiency. So it certainly, what is it? Father played in the NBA is actual 30% improvement over expected annual win shares. The second on that list is having played for Kentucky, which is 26%. So,
100%. That's the reason why Reed Sheppard is being talked about at number one right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, really? I hadn't heard that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, it's controversial, I'd say. You know, I don't think he's number one. Let's say that some basketball people think he's number one on the board. Just because, like, there's a factor of Kentucky guards always underperform for Calipari at Kentucky.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. And this has definitely been the weakest number one in some time, right?
Like, oh, absolutely. No, that's a perfect segue into one of the points I want to make, which is I think this draft is kind of going to be, like, extra chaotic because since there's no clear-cut guys, I don't even know if there's clear-cut tiers. There's probably five guys. Yeah. And then after that, I think teams are just going to take who they want at that point. So I think you're going to see some guys who unexpectedly get chosen way, you know, 20 picks ahead of where they were projected. And then there's some guys that are going to fall. Like, I think Topic is actually a good point. I think I could theoretically see him falling all the way out. You know, if you're saying he had kind of a bad run. Not out of the first round, but out of the lottery.
Sure. Well, yeah. Plus you've got these promises.
Right.
That guys, and there's a lot of guys with promises that are shutting down their workouts. You know, this would be a great draft to have extra picks or the ability to add extra picks. Because, like you said, guys are going to fall, and there's going to be guys that get picked way. These are, and I said this before you joined, this reminds me a lot of the 2013 draft, where the best player in that draft was Giannis Antetokounmpo. And the Cavs literally...
Kawhi Leonard was that draft too, right? And Jimmy Butler?
No, no, I said 13.
13. I thought for some reason he was then. Okay. Oh, yeah,
It was the same draft as Kyrie and Tristan Thompson.
Oh, right, right. Okay.
That was the one where I wanted the Cavs to take Kawhi and they took Tristan Thompson. And I'm not even going to complain about it because 2016 happened. So I can't complain about it. But it reminds me a little bit of the Anthony Bennett draft. There's going to be some colossal busts up at the top. And I'd honestly much rather be in the teens and in the 20s where you've got lower expectations and the weight of those expectations aren't going to crush some of these guys. Another guy that, you know, intrigues me, Khalil Ware from Indiana. I think, you know, bank on skills, size, and shooting. You know, those are the three things. And if you're taking size, they better have either offensive or defensive skills. Another guy I really like, not a big Deron Holmes fan, but who is the guy I was just looking at?
Interesting. That's really interesting you say that because a lot of people are actually. A lot of people are very high on him secretly.
No, I think his name is too generic.
You're big on the names here.
I mean, what are you going to do?
Wait, so Khalil Ware, I'm guessing that's a name thing too then, because that's a cool name.
I don't know, but
well, isn't Khalil like Superman, like real name or something? That's where I think
that's
it comes
true
from.
It is, yeah, that's a good name. There you go. There's a whole study of how your name influences.
Oh, right, I did see that.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, that's been around for years, but
well, sure. It's kind of like I remember sitting in this business meeting with this lady who was saying, you know, like her theory, she was sharing a theory, I guess, that is kind of like conventional wisdom, which is like your name's basically your destiny that your parents give you. You know what I mean? It's kind of like what their hopes and dreams are for you is your name.
Exactly. Exactly. No, yeah. The guy that I found very interesting was Ryan Dunn from Virginia. Wait, not a fan?
You want a Coro? You want 6-8? Part
no,
two?
No, I want My Herb God. Jones part two. I don't want a Coro part two. I want Herb Jones. Okoro doesn't have a 7-2 wingspan. Okay.
Fair enough. Okay. Touche, my friend. That's true. He's probably like 8 Jones inches short on that.
I don't want... I've always found Okoro's defense a little overrated. So, yeah, that's... It definitely is on
wings for sure.
Yeah, I definitely
he's find good him. On guards, but he can't guard wings.
But yeah, Ryan Dunn, if you can teach him to shoot and stick him in a corner, might be a pretty interesting guy. But this isn't a guy I want you to take at 20. These are guys I want to see the Cavs, you know, do their due diligence on there. If they're available for a draft pick you can buy, go take a look at it. If you can get him as an unrestricted rookie free agent, then, you know, go sign him. I think the Cavs have done a very good job of signing.
I think Dunn's going too high for that, but you could probably buy a pick in the second round to get him, perhaps.
Yeah. I mean, just guys like that I've always liked outliers.
Yeah.
You know, and he's a wingspan outlier. So I don't know. I think there's a lot of
guys. Well, he's a tremendous defender.
He's
a tremendous defender.
Yeah. Jonathan Mogbo is another guy that I find interesting.
You made that name up.
I did not. He's a junior from San Francisco.
San Francisco.
This is the comp.
Isn't that?
It's Bill Russell's alma mater.
Oh, right. Yeah. Okay. That's what I thought. Okay. Okay. Yeah.
And the comp here is Shades.
You got the next Bill Russell. Oh my God.
Shades of Ben Simmons, parentheses, if he were a hooper. If he weren't afraid to dunk.
Oh, man.
So, yeah. It's...
Man. Did you see that Ben Simmons video going around?
What'd you say?
Yeah. Did you see that Ben Simmons video going around?
No, I have not. I try to avoid anything that has the word Ben Simmons video in it.
Because it was a hilarious joke. It was just like AI is getting really good, and it's a posted video of him shooting a whole bunch of jumpers at a gym run. And I honestly don't know if that video was real. Like, I really don't know if it was AI generated or not, because I don't believe he can shoot at all. So, like, the video is kind of tremendous for that alone. You know, he's just making all these like crazy fadeaways and three pointers and pull ups and stuff. It's a funny video. And I'm like, he can't do that. Come on.
Well, one of the things that I find hilarious, like one of the things, like, how has Allen Iverson not gotten a huge endorsement deal just from an AI company? Like how has that not happened? Like,
fire all the marketing execs in Silicon Valley.
Exactly.
Jeez.
Exactly. Any other big surprises you think we're going to see draft night? Anybody major gets moved?
That's a great question. I think there's obviously potential. There's so much potential just because of the big names, you know. Let's look back at the Cavs, you know. I think at least I have the suspicion that basically Danny Ainge wanted Agbaji, or I can't say his name right or whatever.
Agbaji
from Kansas. Yeah, yeah. I think, old wing,
by the way.
Yeah, right. No, undersized wing too. And not a natural shooter either. So, I mean, it just failed on all sorts of accounts. Another terrible, disastrous pick. Jeez. Although I don't know if anybody actually came, but after that, oh yeah, you're right. God, don't, man. You just broke my heart again. But No, that's a great question. I mean, but I was using that example. It's like, I think Danny Ainge wanted that guy, you know, and it was already that
dude trade was already in the making.
Yep, it was already in the making. So, you know, do you have any suspicions about what trades might be lined up? I mean, Trae Young, Deontay Murray, Paul George, James Harden,
Grant from Portland.
Grant, yep.
I mean, there's a ton of guys. I think
OG Anunoby, free agent.
Yeah, I think Atlanta would love to get out of the Trae Young business. And I think anything remotely interesting came along for Trae Young, they'll move him. But they can't say they want to be out of the Trae Young business. So it'll be interesting.
I think they'd rather be out on Deontay Murray, to be honest.
No, I think they'd much rather have DeJounte Murray than Trae Young. Trae Young, you can't win with him in the playoffs. And now that
NBA's
taken away foul baiting,
they made it to the Eastern Conference Finals with him. They made it to
before they cracked down on flopping.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm taking Trae Young over Deontay Murray. I think he's buns.
I'm not.
Yeah, I mean,
I think there's a ton of guys. D'Angelo Russell. Lakers would certainly love to move him. His entire contract was signed to be able to be traded. The Lakers keep trying to cobble together, you know, they keep trying to make chicken salad out of chicken shit. So I think there's a possibility Bradley Beal gets moved. I certainly think he's kind of...
That would be shocking.
Well, he's kind of the odd man out there. Like, he's kind of the one that doesn't fit. And they desperately need a point guard.
Yeah. I mean, he was kind of supposed to be that, but he can't. He basically can't do it at a winning level.
No, he's not a point guard. And he's, you know, overpaid. I think the other thing you're going to see about this draft and some of the drafts going forward is that these teams that are operating over the cap, I think there's going to be more of a focus on not drafting for potential with your first round draft picks, and more of a factor or more of a proclivity towards drafting guys that can help you now, you know, or in the next couple seasons, the Jaime Vasquez of the world, you know.
Well, that's a whole wing,
Tristan,
by the way.
Tristan Da Silva, you know.
Yeah,
I would not.
No,
call
I think I agree with you.
Wing. I'd call him a forward, but yeah,
yeah. But I would agree with you. I would definitely agree with you that I think I would attribute it. I wouldn't attribute it to the cap and cap strategy. I think it's just more NBA world GM execs getting smarter about, like, get good basketball players. That's the objective. Who cares at the end of the day, the analytical stuff like age, length, you know, are they good at the game first? Let's not skip over the actual first part of the most important part is, can they play basketball? You know, and I think what you said with the Jaime Jaquez example, that's just an example. He was an all around good player. I even identified him last. You know, I did the Wing Obsession article last year and listed him. And look at Podzemski, too. He turned out pretty well.
Podzemski turned out pretty... No, I'm just messing with you.
Hey, I'm just letting you know. I'm just saying. Although he's not a wing, which I'll grant that to you. But, you know, but he'd be a hell of a backup point guard for our squad. I'll tell you that much.
There you go.
Yeah.
The other side of it is that NBA GMs, they can't invest in a 4 to 5 year development cycle anymore. They need guys on a 1 to 3 year development cycle. Like, if you haven't shown significant improvement in 1 to 3 years, a lot of teams don't have time for you, you know, to figure it out. I mean, that's why Isaac Okoro on most other teams in the league would have been cut bait on 2 years ago, or at least a year ago. You know, it's you can't. What is the phrase I heard? Tightly held about the NBA draft and player development. You have to have passionately held convictions that are easily discardable.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, fail faster. I love it. Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, you know, that's the thing. The tragedy of Isaac Okoro really is, when was his best game as a professional? To me, it was his rookie year game, 35 points. Yeah, exactly. Everybody, we have that game burned into our memories because that was peak Okoro. It was him getting to the rack all the time, him with the ball in his hands, pick and roll situations, secondary shooting. You know, like,
you want to talk about a guy whose coach destroyed his confidence? That's Isaac Okoro and John Blair Bickerstaff. I've never seen a player whose development was more mismanaged than Isaac Okoro's.
Yeah, but I'm not putting that on JB.
Oh, I am. That whole not send him to the G League. Well,
JB's problem is he was trying to play him at the three. So I'll agree with you there. But he gave him every opportunity.
His role shouldn't have been go guard the other team's best player. His role should have been go develop into a good basketball player and then go guard the other team's best player. They made him a role player from the start when they should have been developing him.
No, I would agree with that. Yeah, no, you just actually made me think, why didn't they adopt like the Spurs model? Send him to the G League.
Absolutely.
To be a lead guard.
I think the Cavs have actually adopted that model a little bit more than they used to. And I think they've been a lot more successful with that model than high lottery picks. You see Dean Wade, you know.
Yeah.
Is the perfect Craig Porter example Jr. of that. Yep. Yeah. Craig Porter
Sam
Jr.
Sam Merrill.
I think the other guy you're going to see like that, I think the Cavs are being very deliberate with Amone Bates that way. And I think you're going to see Pete Nance, I think, has probably got a higher upside than Mobley the Elder.
I wouldn't be surprised by that.
Well, and he also has that, you know, second generation NBA player thing going on.
There you go. Yes, sir. Yeah, shout out to Larry Nance Sr.
So, Chris, anything you want to talk about before we put this bad boy to bed?
Nah, I mean, I'd say Boston's a very beautiful place. a lot of history, a lot of old stuff around that still exists. So, it's been a cool trip. Downtown is beautiful. It was so beautiful with the fog over the city. That was sweet.
Nice.
Interesting mix of people in Boston. You know, there's the uber rich mixed with like drunk Irishmen. So, it's
Boston
a funny
habit with a shock spot.
You know? Yeah, you nailed it. Damn. Oh my God. Yeah. I went to my buddy's son's baseball game. And I hear the umpire strike one on the batter. And I'm like, what? You can say the first R in strike, but batter, you know?
Yeah, for sure. I think we'll probably have a free agency preview coming up, you know, maybe after the draft, maybe early next week. And
OG Anunoby, let's get that agenda going.
I wish
OG Anunoby sign and trade.
I don't think
let's go.
The Knicks are signing trading with the Cavs, but we can always.
Absolutely. We have to find a third team sucker somehow.
Well, maybe if LeBron goes to New York instead of LA.
Ooh,
or Phoenix. That's the other LeBron rumor is Phoenix.
Oh, really? Yeah. You heard it here, folks. You heard it here first, folks. Jeez.
Well, go play with
KD. I didn't know that. Yeah.
Well, I think, and, you know, the teams that Bronny has said he'll work out for are, I think, the LA teams, the Cavs, and the Suns. And I think that really can.
The Cavs made the list.
Cavs did make the list. This was a couple of weeks ago. But I think that's the short list of the teams that LeBron may end up with. And I mean, he could certainly end up back in Lakerland. But I think he's keeping his options open. I think he wants one more ring, or at least one more run at the ring. And I don't think this team they put around him, they're a play-in team for the last 3 years.
Yeah, no, they have no chance. They've got to make a major move. They probably have to make a major move or two if they actually want to contend. I mean, they can't even beat Denver. So, I mean, what are we even talking about?
Yeah, and speaking of Denver,
back real quickly to the year. Yeah.
I don't think the West is trash outside of Denver. Or I think Denver isn't trash, but I just think they ran out of gas.
Maybe. No, I mean, I think they lost. Who'd they lose over there? Bruce Brown.
Oh, no, and he's the guy you were talking about earlier. When you're talking about the way Drew Holiday plays, where they put him in the role situation. Like, Drew Holiday is a rich man's Bruce Brown.
And you meant that as a compliment, too.
I did, to both players.
Nice. No, I mean, I wanted to double back to your Bronny point. There's something, like, the thing I've heard said about Bronny is that he may make a better NBA player than college player because he'll never be a star. You know, he was never going to be a star. He was going to be a role player, and he's learned how to play the role player game, you know, from the jump. Like, even when he was on his high school teams, AAU teams, he was a role player. So some think that he might be even more well adjusted for the NBA than he ever was for star prep school or college. I wonder what you thought about that.
I mean, it's interesting. You look at, you know, this article that I talked about from Havistro mentioned Gary Payton Jr., you know, very similar guy who, you know, role player. A lot of these guys, they've had their, you know, the people that are around them have dissected their game. Jalen Brunson, he started in the NBA as a role player. I certainly think that you can develop into a very good player if you have that long NBA runway and you have the right people guiding you. I mean, that's exactly what Jalen Brunson did. Like, nobody, what I think he was the 30th or 31st pick of the draft. And I loved him coming out of UConn, but I think it's almost easier to become a star. There's a path to becoming a star in the NBA that starts with being a high-level role player. And I think that is very hard to do as a lottery pick at times. Go ahead.
No, you made me think of Kawhi.
Yeah.
Role player to star player. You know, he kind of made that turn. But I mean, that's the only lottery I can use.
I think it was also easier on the Spurs because they had traded up into that. They were a perennial playoff team. Like, he was not coming in as the star. And he was a 14th pick, not a, you know, 5th pick. And they traded up to Indiana. They traded Paul George to Indiana to get him. But they already had Duncan. They had Ginobili. They had Parker. So he was already set up for that. There was no, you know, it was a tailor-made role for him. But I 100% agree with you, obviously.
Gotcha.
So I don't know.
Sorry to digress. It's an interesting theory. I didn't know that Cleveland was listed for Bronny James. That is very interesting. I mean, and you know, we've seen there's been public flirtations. Would you characterize some of LeBron's actions as public flirtations? You know, coming to the game and stuff like that.
Absolutely, I would. Yeah. LeBron's no fool. He's the king of subtext.
Right.
Now, that being said, I thought what David wrote in the 5-on-5 about shades of gray and tweeting pictures of a racehorse was one of the funnier bits I've seen in the CTV post in a while. And I do absolutely feel like if Bronny James is on another team and LeBron's going to subtweet the shit out of whatever team he's playing for. Yeah. I almost think he'd be less inclined to do that on his own team. I kind of, you know, it'll be interesting to see what team both of them end up on. And it's going to be a circus no matter what. So.
Yeah, this is Adam Silver's NBA right here.
He's about to be jumping. About to be a 2-day draft. Shyam Sharani are going to die of sleep deprivation.
Indeed.
Poor guy. Before we take off, anything to pitch other than Boston? Or are you just going to...
No, I'll pitch one. My girl Charlie XCX brought out a new album, Brat. Been making the airwaves. Got a very high rating on Pitchfork. Album of the year contender. So go check it out. Actually, ironically, it's not one of my favorite albums of hers. So I guess I'm not doing a great job selling it that way. But she just has had very high peaks with Pop 2 and the other one. I can't remember the first title one. But,
I don't know. What's her name again?
Charlie XCX.
Nice.
Yeah. So new album, Brat. Go stream it. Listen to it.
Nice. I got a couple things to pitch. I've got a novel I read last week while I was flying back and forth to Wichita to see my 97-year-old grandpa for Father's Day.
Wow.
Yeah.
97?
97. Cherokee don't crack, man, buddy.
That's right. That's right. Those jeans, man. Yeah. You're going to live forever.
I hope so. No, I sent a picture to the to the group chat of three generations of Smith dads with me and my brother.
Oh, yeah. That was so cool. That was a great picture. Yeah, yeah. 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 Absolutely. We love it. We love to see family coming together there.
There you go. But the novel I read was a novel called Cuyahoga by a writer named Pete Beattie, who is from Cleveland, wrote for The Athletic for a while, also taught at Kent State. Now I think he teaches at somewhere down south. You know, really, really interesting novel. It's not a long read, probably get through it in 4 or 5 hours. It is a novel about a tall tale. A Paul Bunyan-esque figure named Big Son, S-O-N, and the battle and rivalry between Ohio City and Cleveland in the 1830s as they were getting established as cities. So it's actually a pretty cool story, really good writing, really interesting, easy read, great plane ride read. And then the other thing I'm going to pitch is the Cleveland Indians. I got it wrong. Cleveland Guardians. Sorry.
Yeah, it's okay. It's a hard habit to break if you've lived 30 years with the other name. Yeah.
Hey. No, I love the Guards. They've been an absolute blast to watch this year.
They're young though, aren't they? They're very super young.
They have great pitching. They have the best closer in baseball. They have.
Wow.
One of the best hitters in baseball right now, and Stephen Kwan, one of the best power hitters in, you know, Guardians all-timer, Jose Ramirez.
Ramirez, an absolute
blast to watch. So if you get a chance, go out to the ball game. They had over 100,000 people at the ball game on Sunday, 100,000 people came into the city, I think they said. Or maybe that was the attendance for the series. Yeah. I don't know. Anyway,
that's probably the attendance for the series, which would mean they sold out almost sold out every game then.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was attendance for the series. You're right. So, yeah, it was an absolute, they're an absolute blast to watch. It's super cheap to go to the ball game now. You can go sit up in the standing room only and drink yourself silly and enjoy the ball
game. Get home safely, please.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Spay and neuter your pets too.
Anyway. That's right.
Anyway, but that's all I got, and we will, maybe be back with an Instapod after the draft. Not sure, but definitely stay tuned next week for some from post draft and pre free agency. And with that, go Cavs.
Go Cavs.
Thank you for listening to Cavs the Blogs podcast. Check back soon for some more fun with your favorite blogger. There's a fire.
Is your vehicle stopping like it should? Does it squeal or grind when you brake? Don't miss out on summer brake deals at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Oh, oh.